In Jennifer Lynn Barnes' All In, the third installment of the Natural series, teenage FBI consultants face their most personal case yet. The book has captivated readers with its perfect blend of psychological profiling, mathematical patterns, and emotional depth, earning it a devoted following among young adult thriller fans. Barnes, with her PhD in psychology from Yale and background in cognitive science, brings unparalleled authenticity to her portrayal of teenage profilers. This series has been praised by James Patterson as a must-read for anyone who loves a good crime story and has been optioned for television development. What makes this particular installment so compelling is how it weaves together cold cases, mathematical sequences, and deeply personal stakes for our protagonists. In the quiet moments of New Year's Eve, Cassie Hobbs' world shatters when her father delivers devastating news. Her mother's remains have been found 5 years after her disappearance. The skeleton was wrapped in a royal blue shawl with a pressed flower in the left hand and her mother's necklace tangled in the ribcage. The careful burial suggests remorse, with a mysterious symbol etched into the wooden coffin, seven circles forming a heptagon around a cross. Before Cassie can process this revelation, she and her fellow naturals, teenagers with exceptional abilities recruited by the FBI, are summoned to Las Vegas. Three bodies have been discovered in 3 days at three different casinos. The first victim, Alexander Ruiz, was found floating in a rooftop pool, initially dismissed as an accidental drowning, until authorities discovered numbers inked onto her wrist, 3213. The second victim, stage magician Sylvester Wilde, died when he caught fire during a performance, with the numbers 4558 burned into his skin. The third, 78-year-old Eugene Lockhart, was shot with an arrow bearing the Latin inscription, tertium, meaning for the third time, with 9144 written on his wrist. As the team arrived in Vegas, they're immediately thrust into the investigation. The casino owners, desperate to avoid publicity about murders on their properties, have pressured local law enforcement to bring in the FBI. The pattern is clear. Three bodies, three casinos, 3 days, and the killer is just getting started. The Naturals program brings together teenagers with exceptional abilities. Cassie can build psychological profiles of people based on minimal information. Dean can think like a killer, having been raised by his serial killer father. Michael can read emotions with uncanny accuracy, a skill he developed to survive his abusive home. Leah is a human lie detector who grew up in a cult. Sloane has a photographic memory and extraordinary mathematical abilities, but struggles with social interactions. These teenagers aren't just colleagues. They've become a makeshift family, each understanding the other's trauma in ways no one else can. Their shared abnormal childhoods have created bonds that run deeper than friendship. When Michael returns from a Christmas visit home with hidden bruises from his father's abuse, the others silently rally around him. When Sloane becomes agitated by returning to her hometown of Las Vegas, they protect her without question. The team's dynamic is further complicated by romantic entanglements. Cassie and Dean are drawn to each other through their shared understanding of loss, while Michael harbors feelings for Cassie that create tension within the group. Leah, typically sharp-tongued and guarded, shows surprising vulnerability when she pulls Cassie aside to warn her that the team is at issue capacity and can't handle another emotional crisis. These interpersonal dynamics create a rich backdrop against which the murder investigation unfolds, with each team member's personal demons influencing how they approach the case. When the fourth victim, acclaimed actress and professional poker player Camille Holt, is discovered strangled with her signature pearl necklace in the Majesty Casino's private gaming room, Detective Sloane notices something others missed. The number 2333 carved into Holt's wrist isn't random, but connects to the previous victim's markings, 144, 377, and 987. These numbers form segments of the Fibonacci sequence, a mathematical pattern where each number is the sum of the two preceding ones, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55, 89, 144, 233, 377, 610, 987, 2333. This breakthrough leads to an even more disturbing revelation. When plotted on a detailed map of the Las Vegas Strip, the murder locations create a perfect Fibonacci spiral, a naturally occurring pattern found in everything from Nautilus shells to galaxy formations. The first murder occurred at the outskirts, near the Welcome to Las Vegas sign, with each subsequent killing moving inward along the spiral's curve. According to Sloan's precise calculations, all remaining murders will take place within the sprawling Majesty Casino complex, spiraling closer to the center with each victim. The fifth murder is predicted to occur in the opulent Grand Ballroom, a venue that hosts high-profile entertainment events nightly. The pattern's complexity extends beyond spatial coordinates into temporal precision. After a week of round-the-clock surveillance yields no results, Sloan discovers the murders aren't following a simple daily pattern, but instead correspond to specific dates derived from the Fibonacci sequence. Cross-referencing cold cases across multiple databases reveals something even more chilling. Similar killing sprees dating back to the 1960s, each featuring exactly 9 victims killed on Fibonacci-derived dates. The methods of murder follow a precise, repeating cycle: drowning, burning, impalement, strangling, knifing, beating, and poisoning. Each series spans exactly 21 days, another Fibonacci number. The investigation team realizes they're facing something far more sinister than a lone serial killer. The mathematical precision, historical patterns, and ritualistic nature of the murders suggest an organized group, possibly a secret society that has been orchestrating these elaborate killing sequences for generations. The murderer appears to be either proving their worth for membership or continuing an established tradition. This theory gains weight when they discover subtle variations in handwriting on the victim's carved numbers, suggesting multiple killers over the decades, all following the same mathematical blueprint. The implications are staggering. If this pattern holds true, they have exactly 3 days until the killer strikes again in the Grand Ballroom, and 5 more victims to go before the sequence completes, unless they can break a code that's been puzzling law enforcement for over half a century. As the investigation intensifies, personal connections to the case emerge. Sloan encounters her biological half-brother, Aaron Shaw, who works at the Majesty Casino. Their father, the powerful Grayson Shaw, has never acknowledged Sloan's existence and coldly warns her to stay away from his real family. Meanwhile, Cassie becomes increasingly obsessed with her mother's case, recognizing similarities between the symbol on her mother's coffin and patterns emerging in their current investigation. Dean supports her through this process, examining the files she couldn't bear to open alone and offering comfort when the confirmation finally comes that the remains are indeed her mother's. The personal stakes escalate when Michael discovers numbers etched on his arm, 7761, identifying him as the next target. The team realizes the killer used a substance like poison ivy to create the marking, which only became visible 24 to 48 hours after exposure. Despite the danger, Michael insists on serving as bait, refusing to run or hide because it doesn't work. It never works. As they prepare for the inevitable confrontation at the Grand Ballroom, another shocking development occurs. They receive a message from Nightshade, the serial killer who murdered Agent Judd's daughter years earlier. Nightshade has been watching them, knows their identities, and seems to be playing a game of his own alongside their current investigation. With Michael wired and surrounded by FBI agents at the Majesty's Grand Ballroom, the team watches anxiously through surveillance feeds. Analyzing the victimology, Cassie realizes they've been missing something crucial. All victims except Eugene Lockhart are under 25, beautiful, and privileged. More importantly, they all connect to Tori Howard, a stage hypnotist and foster sister to their primary suspect, Bo Donovan. Alexandra resembled Tori from behind. Sylvester was a stage magician like Tori. Camille died after drinks with Tori. And Michael was targeted near Leah, who resembles Tori. The pattern becomes clear. The final kill was always meant to be Tori herself, and the killer is Beau Donovan. But when the lights go out at the Grand Ballroom and chaos erupts, it's not Michael or Tori who falls victim, it's Aaron Shaw, Sloane's half-brother. The team realizes Michael was only ever a stand-in. Aaron was the true target all along. Sloane collapses in grief, repeating that she had warned her father about this exact date and location. Though Beau is arrested, the team knows he's planned everything meticulously and likely left no evidence. They race against time to find proof before he must be released, analyzing security footage to track his movements through the crowd and identify where he might have planted the murder weapon. Through Tori's detailed testimony, the team uncovers the layers of Beau's haunting past. At age 6, he was discovered severely dehydrated and near death in the Mojave Desert, having been deliberately abandoned for what forensics determined to be 5 days. The trauma was so severe that he remained completely mute for 2 years afterward, communicating only through drawings of circles and crosses. Despite extensive searches and DNA testing, his origins remained a mystery. No missing persons reports matched his description, and no family ever came forward to claim him. During an intense interrogation session, Beau reveals a ritualistic self-carved symbol on his chest, 7 meticulously arranged circles forming a perfect heptagon around an ornate cross. He explains it represents 7 masters, the Pythia, and 9, each circle containing intricate patterns that seem to date back centuries. Cassie's blood runs cold as she instantly recognizes this symbol. It matches exactly with the mysterious marking she discovered etched into her mother's silver coffin handles, a detail she'd previously dismissed as decorative. Before they can extract more information, Beau begins violently convulsing. Despite immediate medical intervention, he dies from what toxicology later identifies as a rare combination of ancient herbs and modern synthetic poison. His final words, "I don't believe in wishing," echo a phrase found in recovered cult documents dating back to 1922. The investigation reveals the cult's complex hierarchy, 9 permanent positions held by individuals chosen through elaborate ritualistic trials. The 7 masters form the inner council, each representing different aspects of power: wealth, influence, knowledge, warfare, spirituality, justice, and sacrifice. The Pythia, always a woman with distinctive strawberry blonde hair, serves as their oracle and vessel, bearing the next generation's leader. At the apex sits 9, a child born to it, groomed from birth to lead the organization. Nightshade's capture provides crucial insights into the cult's succession practices. He discloses that Beau had been selected as their heir apparent, but was cast out after failing a mysterious initiation rite at age 6. More chillingly, he reveals that Cassie's mother, Sarah, had once held the revered position of Pythia. Her death, previously believed to be accidental, was actually the result of a ritualistic contest with the current Pythia, a brutal tradition dating back to 1888. With his last bargaining chip, Nightshade directs them to room 2117 at the Dark Angel Hotel Casino, promising they'll find this current Pythia, a woman whose existence threatens everything Cassie thought she knew about her family's history. In the dimly lit hotel room, Cassie encounters a gruesome scene that will forever alter her understanding of her past. The strawberry blonde woman lies dead on the carpet, blood pooling around her from multiple knife wounds that suggest a practiced, ruthless killer. The room's silence is broken only by the soft breathing of a small figure huddled in an oversized armchair, a little girl with haunted eyes who introduces herself simply as 9, though she later admits to being called Laurel by her mother. When questioned about the dead woman, Laurel's response is chillingly matter-of-fact. The victim wasn't her mother, but a handler, one of many assigned to watch her over the years. Her casual acceptance of violence speaks to years of exposure to the cult's brutality. As Cassie processes this information, Laurel reaches for a silver locket hanging around her neck, her small fingers trembling as she opens it. The photograph inside shatters Cassie's world. There, clearly dated just 3 months ago, is an image of Laurel standing beside Cassie's mother, alive, older, but unmistakable. "Masters come and masters go, but the Pythia lives in the room," Laurel whispers, her voice taking on an almost trance-like quality. This cryptic phrase, Cassie realizes, holds the key to understanding her mother's role within Nightshade's hierarchy. At what should have been her mother's funeral, Cassie maintains a carefully crafted facade of grief. Standing between Dean and their friends, she watches as an empty casket is lowered into the ground. The deception is necessary. Every movement, every tear, must convince any watching cult members that she believes her mother is truly dead. Laurel, meanwhile, has been officially placed in protective custody under the pretense of being a witness to Nightshade's activities, concealing her true connection to Cassie and the Pythia. The stakes have never been higher. Cassie now understands that her mother's disappearance wasn't a murder, but an elevation. She had become the Pythia, a position of power within Nightshade that has existed for generations. The cult's century-long history of orchestrated killings takes on new meaning with this revelation. Each murder wasn't just random violence, but part of an intricate power structure that kept the Pythia at its center. As the novel closes, Cassie's mission transforms from seeking justice to orchestrating a rescue. She must navigate the dangerous waters between the FBI's official investigation and her personal quest to find the Masters, while simultaneously protecting Laurel, the only living link to her mother's whereabouts. No longer is she simply a teenage profiler with an uncanny ability to understand killers. She's become a daughter with a desperate mission to dismantle a century-old cult and save the mother she thought she'd lost. The Fibonacci sequence serves as more than just a plot device in All In. It represents humanity's innate desire to find patterns in chaos. The killer's obsession with mathematical precision reflects a psychological need for control and meaning, manifesting in his meticulous crime scenes arranged according to the golden ratio. Each murder becomes a desperate attempt to impose order on a disordered world, with victims positioned at precise angles and distances that mirror this ancient mathematical sequence. By following the established pattern of previous killings, Beau seeks to prove his worthiness to a group that abandoned him, demonstrating how trauma can manifest as a desperate need for belonging and validation through destructive perfectionism. This psychological insight extends to our protagonists as well. Cassie clings to her profiling abilities as a way to make sense of her mother's disappearance, developing an almost supernatural ability to read people's intentions and motivations. Her hypervigilance, while useful in investigations, stems from the traumatic uncertainty surrounding her loss. Sloane finds comfort in numbers and calculations when social interactions become overwhelming, using mathematics as both a shield and a lens through which to understand human behavior. Her ability to detect patterns in seemingly random data becomes both her greatest asset and her way of maintaining emotional distance. Dean struggles against the pattern of violence inherited from his father, constantly questioning whether his talent for understanding killers comes from nature or nurture. Each character battles their own psychological demons while hunting a killer who has embraced his. Barnes' background in psychology shines through in her nuanced portrayal of trauma responses and cognitive adaptation. The Naturals aren't just gifted teenagers, they're survivors whose exceptional abilities developed as coping mechanisms for unbearable circumstances. Michael's charm masks deep-seated trust issues, while Leah's talent for deception emerged from years of protecting herself from emotional harm. The author skillfully demonstrates how trauma rewires the brain, creating both vulnerabilities and extraordinary capabilities. Their journey reminds us that our greatest strengths often emerge from our deepest wounds, a theme that resonates throughout the narrative as each character learns to transform their pain into purpose. The novel's exploration of pattern recognition extends beyond individual psychology to broader questions about human nature. Through the investigation, Barnes suggests that our drive to find meaning in randomness is both our greatest asset and our potential downfall. The characters must learn to distinguish between genuine patterns and the false connections our minds create to protect us from the terrifying reality of chaos. This delicate balance between insight and obsession becomes a central tension that drives both the plot and character development. Throughout All In, characters grapple with what they've inherited, both literally and figuratively. Dean's struggle with his genetic legacy runs deep as he confronts the terrifying possibility of sharing his father's violent predispositions. His father's methodical approach to murder, his calculated charm, and his ability to appear normal haunt Dean's every decision. Michael's inheritance manifests in his heightened alertness to anger, his instinct to protect others, and his difficulty trusting authority figures, all direct results of growing up in an abusive household where his father's rage could explode at any moment. Sloane's relationship with inheritance is equally complex. Her biological father's rejection shapes her approach to emotional connections, leading her to seek patterns and predictability in human behavior. Her newfound relationship with her half-brother offers both healing and complications, forcing her to confront questions about nature versus nurture. Meanwhile, Cassie's discovery about her mother's role as the Pythia creates a crisis of identity. She must reconcile her memory of a loving parent with the reality of someone deeply embedded in a murderous cult. The cult's structure itself represents a perverse inheritance, a legacy of blood passed down through generations. The Masters select a Pythia who bears a child destined to become nine, continuing a cycle of manipulation and murder that has persisted for over a century. This system mirrors real-world generational trauma, where patterns of abuse and control are perpetuated through careful grooming and psychological manipulation. The cult's emphasis on bloodlines and predetermined roles reflects a darker version of familial expectations and destiny. Yet the novel ultimately offers hope that cycles can be broken. The Naturals form their own chosen family, creating a support system based on understanding and shared experience rather than blood ties. Their relationships demonstrate how trauma survivors can build new, healthy connections that help heal old wounds. Leah's expertise in deception becomes a tool for protection rather than manipulation. Michael's heightened awareness of others' emotions transforms into empathy rather than paranoia. When Cassie learns her mother is alive, she doesn't resign herself to fate, but resolves to fight for a different future, one where Laurel isn't groomed to become the next nine, and where her mother is freed from her role as the Pythia. This determination to break the cycle extends beyond her immediate family to challenge the entire cult's structure of predetermined roles and destinies. In this way, All In becomes more than a thriller about serial killers and mathematical patterns. It's a powerful exploration of how we confront our inheritances, whether genetic, psychological, or circumstantial, and choose which legacies to carry forward and which to leave behind. The characters demonstrate that while we cannot change our past or our DNA, we can choose how to use what we've inherited, transforming potential weaknesses into strengths and breaking destructive patterns to forge healthier futures. Perhaps the most profound theme in All In is the healing power of human connection. Each of the Naturals has experienced profound isolation. Cassie losing her mother, Dean rejected by society for his father's crimes, Michael trapped in an abusive home, Sloane abandoned by her father, and Leah escaping a cult. Yet together, they form bonds that help them survive their traumas. When Leah tells Cassie the team is at issue capacity, it's not just a harsh reality check. It's a testament to how deeply they've come to rely on each other. When Michael refuses to hide from danger because it never works, his friends stand by him, rather than forcing him to face his fears alone. When Sloane breaks down after Aaron's death, the team surrounds her with silent support. Even as they hunt a killer obsessed with patterns and numbers, the Naturals demonstrate that the most powerful force against darkness is genuine human connection. In a world where the cult of nine has twisted family bonds into instruments of control, the Naturals have created authentic relationships based on choice rather than obligation. This message resonates beyond the pages of the novel, reminding readers that even in our darkest moments, connection offers a path forward. As Cassie stands at the fake grave with her chosen family surrounding her, she finds strength not in vengeance, but in love. The love that will fuel her search for her mother and her protection of young Laurel. In the end, All In is a masterful thriller that keeps readers guessing until the final page, but it's also a powerful testament to resilience, chosen family, and the unbreakable bonds that form when people see each other's broken places and choose to stay anyway.